Our next guest on Downtown has been writing about television for two decades now. From the Star Ledger to his work on HitFix.com, What's Alan Watching? And now has a brand new book out in collaboration with Matt Zoller Seitz entitled TV, The Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Alan Sepinwall, great to have you back with us here on Downtown.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely love the book. And let's start with the genesis for this, which it sounds like was mostly you and Matt spending about 10 years having these conversations about the greatest shows on your own.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to not only share the TV beat at basically the best time in history to be a TV critic at Tony Soprano's hometown paper and all of that, but we really got along, which doesn't always happen with people who share a beat at a newspaper, and we sat at adjacent desks, and we would have these arguments all the time about what was the best show right now, what was the best episode, all of that. And then we stopped working together, and we really missed that, and we kept making noises about a way to reunite. And finally, one day, Matt calls me up out of the blue a couple of years ago and says, we should do a book where we rank the best shows of all time.
And in many ways, along with ranking them, this is also an attempt to do what folks like Leonard Maltin had done for the movies, and that's to establish the American canon.
Exactly right. There's been a couple of books about TV that have tried that, but really not a lot. And there's so many film books in this nature, and TV's been so great for the last 15, 20 years, and there's been so much great TV long before that, just maybe not as concentrated, that it seems silly to us that there was no book like this in the modern era. So we're happy just to do it and hopefully encourage other people to try too.
Well, let's cut to the chase and go to the top of the list, and basically, you had a five-way tie that you had to break involving The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, Cheers, and The Simpsons, and then you went to some pretty strenuous criteria to figure out the best of all.
Yeah, we originally had the scoring system that we used. We ran about 200 or 250 shows through it, put them all in the spreadsheet, tabulated it up, and we came up with our top 100, but we also wound up with this five-way tie for first, and we decided rather than try to crunch the numbers some more, since the numbers were, to begin with, kind of arbitrary, we said, let's just argue this out. We got on GChat. We had an argument that went back and forth over several days, which is reproduced in the book, and, you know, over time, Matt kept arguing for The Sopranos, I kept arguing for The Simpsons, and I wore him down, and I won.
Well, and I love what you talk about here and the fact that if you look at the funny moments, and there were many in both The Sopranos and The Wire, and weighing those comedic moments in those dramatic shows against the moments that were touching, poignant, dramatic in The Simpsons, and you feel like it was that effort that won out for The Simpsons. And I especially love when you write about the switch of the characters of Bart and Lisa away from being just comic plot points to really displaying what you call the melancholia of childhood.
Yeah, if you go back and you watch the first couple seasons of the show, Bart's the main character. He's saying, eat my shorts. He's doing the El Bardo graffiti. He's doing all these pranks. And none of those things necessarily went away. But the show started pivoting to be about Homer much more. And Homer was driving all the stories and all of the comedy. And then the show could really deal with sort of like the sad parts of being a kid, and so Bart, like, he's peaked in the fourth grade, and that's really not great for him, and on some level he understands that, and Lisa never fits in anywhere because she's too smart and too sensitive and too political to fit in either with kids her age or her parents, and the show has mined a lot of great stories about that over 27, 28 years and counting.
As you mentioned when talking about Cheers, perhaps they didn't take as many risks as other shows, but is it safe to say you feel like that's the most consistently strong comedy that's ever been on American television?
Yeah, because there's really no significant down period. Maybe the last few years weren't quite as great as the show had been early on, but it's very hard to go through the run of Cheers and find outright bad episodes. They were aiming for sort of a smaller target than what The Simpsons was doing. The Simpsons was trying to do everything, and a lot of these dramas were trying to do so many things, and Cheers was just, we're going to be a comedy inside a bar, and sometimes it was dramatic, but mainly it was just great punchlines, great characters, and they just did it so well for so long, and that's why we said that of all the traditional multi-camera filmed in front of a live studio audience comedies, that's the best one ever.
We're talking with Alan Sepinwall. His new book is entitled TV, The Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. And when you look at The Sopranos, The Wire, Breaking Bad, and all those other shows that have really excelled in this new golden age of TV on cable, you also pay homage to the shows on broadcast television that made those developments possible.
Yeah, no, we write about Hill Street Blues, which is sort of the Citizen Kane of television and informed everything that followed from NYPD Blue to The Sopranos to Breaking Bad to things that are happening now. I Love Lucy. A lot of the essay about I Love Lucy isn't just about how it was a great slapstick show, but basically how Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz created the whole idea of actually filming TV shows, saving them for posterity, selling them into syndication, owning them, and all of that. And that's, like, TV would be very different if it was still just everything was being produced live and then someone pointed a camera at a monitor so that you could get a blurry-looking kinescope out of it.
You talk in the book about some of the shows that have focused on the lives of young people, and it's interesting to me that some of the best were not on the air for very long, and I want to talk about a couple of them because they're both favorites of mine, Freaks and Geeks and My So-Called Life.
Well, in a way, they both benefited from only lasting one season because it's hard for any show to run a long time and be good. And there's a bunch of shows that we have in the book that either really only had one great season, but that season was just good enough to get it into the top 100, or the season wasn't good enough, but we wrote about it elsewhere in the book, like Homeland Season 1 or Dexter Season 4 and things like that. And shows about teenagers, they have it twice as hard, and there's a long tradition of shows about high school kids where when they go off to college, the show falls apart. And Freaks and Geeks in My So-Called Life, they got to live fast, they got to die young, they got to leave a really good-looking corpse. Claire Danes, you know, is now a big star, and if you look at the Freaks and Geeks cast, it's ridiculous. They had on one show James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, Linda Cardellini, Judd Apatow was producing it, Paul Feig had created it, and it was all on one show, and NBC couldn't wait to cancel it.
Friday Night Lights is a show that never had a huge audience, but it had a passionate and loyal following. And for those who thought the show was only about football, they missed out on what you guys say might have been the best and most realistic portrayal ever of marriage.
What I find a lot of the time when I'm interviewing creators of shows, and especially creators of shows that involve romance on some level, is they often like to say that there's nothing more boring than a happy couple. And there's nothing more boring than people who get married. And I would like to sit all of these people down and have them watch Friday Night Lights. Because the way that show portrayed the relationship of Coach and Mrs. Coach, of Eric and Tammy Taylor, who were a happy couple even though they argued, you know, and didn't always get along, but were overall a happy couple and a positive relationship for other people to aspire to. And it's just so fascinating and so much fun and so moving and everything else. And if you really try and if you have the right actors and the right characters, A happy couple is no less interesting than a couple that hasn't gotten together yet or a couple that's fighting all the time.
I love, toward the end of the book, a wonderful section about those shows that are still on the air that could someday crack this top 100 list and a couple of favorites, The Americans and Fargo. What makes them stand out for you?
The Americans, I think, like, we had a rule that other than something like The Simpsons, which had been on the air forever, we didn't want to put current shows in the top 100 because it didn't seem fair to evaluate them until they were done. If we hadn't had that rule, I think The Americans would have finished really, really highly because it feels, at this point, like it's on par with some of those early aughts HBO dramas and FX dramas. It's really at that level. It's kind of this a Trojan horse where it seems like it's a genre show, it's the spy show, or the KGB infiltrating Washington in the early 80s, but it's really a show about marriage, and it's so interesting, and the performances are fantastic by Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys, and I love it, and I'm glad it's going to get to see out its whole run. I'm glad that they're finally got nominated for some big Emmys, and, you know, hope maybe they'll win one this weekend. So I love that. And Fargo is a show that had no business working whatsoever, because who on earth would have thought it was a good idea to do a Fargo TV show and adapt something by these really idiosyncratic filmmakers, the Coen brothers. And Noah Hawley, the guy who created the show, figured out a way to make it feel like the Coens, but not just like a ripoff of the Coens. It's its own thing, and it's so much fun. I love it.
Alan, if you can, apart from great series, what are the best episodes of all time from your perspective, one comedy, one drama?
The best drama episode of all time, that's easy. That is Ozymandias from Breaking Bad. It's the third to last episode. It's the one where you have the result of the shootout in the desert and the fight between Walt and Skyler over the kitchen knife and some of the other things that happen. That is the pinnacle of everything that dramatic television can be. And for best comedy episode, God, that's, I hadn't thought about that as much. There are a lot of different possibilities. But since I say that The Simpsons is the best show of all time, let me pick my favorite Simpsons episode. And right now, at this moment in time, I'm going to pick Homer at the bat with the Springfield ice nuclear power plant softball team, and Don Mattingly has to shave his sideburns, and Ken Griffey Jr. gets gigantism. I could watch that all day, every day, for years, and not tire of it.
I hope you're getting a kickback from Netflix, because I found myself in reading the book now wanting to go back and rewatch a bunch of these series and see those handful that I've never gotten to before, because that's what makes the book great. It opens the discussion and it keeps it going.
Well, that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this, is there's so much TV out there. There's not just all of these great current shows, but because of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and other forms of home video, you have access to the greatest shows of all time. And I encounter all the time people saying that they're basically overwhelmed by the choice, and they often find themselves watching shows that they don't even like very much because they feel a little too paralyzed to try something else. And one of our hopes is that people will pick up TV the Book and they'll look through it and they'll say, oh, instead of watching this show that I'm not even sure is good, I'm going to try Cheers for the first time. What's this Terriers show? That sounds interesting. I'm going to look at that. And like, you should never have to watch a bad TV show again, because there's just so much out there.
All right, Emmys are coming up. What should win this weekend for Best Comedy and Best Drama?
Let's see. For Best Drama, like I said, I would love to see The Americans break through. I suspect Game of Thrones will win again, both because it's very good, but also because the Emmys changed the rules recently, which stacks the deck in favor of any show that's on HBO, which also means that Veep is likely to win Best Comedy, and it had maybe its best year ever, so I wouldn't mind that. I'm kind of pulling for Transparent, which is the Amazon show, which isn't really a comedy, but is eligible in the category, and I think is the best show in the category, but there's... It's a really good time in TV. There's very few things that would win on either side that would make me unhappy. I guess if Downton Abbey or House of Cards or Homeland won Best Drama, I would, but I don't think they're going to, so I'm not too worried.
Well, Alan, I got to tell you, my enjoyment of shows like Mad Men and Breaking Bad was made even better by then reading your column and your review each week to see what you thought of them. And the book is a wonderful read. Congratulations to you and Matt on a terrific work that's both scholarly and just a joyride to read through. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks again for having me.